Morning Meeting, brought to you by Verizon. Come home to a better network.
Well, guys, it wasn't quite the humiliation that Patriots Nation was looking for. Well, maybe it was.
I mean,
the Patriots didn't have anything to do with it, but the Colts certainly left with their tail between their legs because of other reasons.
Yeah, what are they calling it now? Pink slip Pagano?
I like what the Chuck.
What the Chuck?
I like what the Chuck. What the Chuck is good.
Inexplicable.
Yeah. I mean, to me, though, I think the Patriots did have something to do with it. Because I think when the Patriots come to town and you have a history like Chuck Pagano and the Colts have, you start thinking a different way. Like, you know, I have to do these things in order to compete or at least impress. And I think they...
We got to break the rules because Belichick's on the other side.
I think that they overthought it. I think they overthought it. They were in a game where it didn't require that.
I think if they had overthought it, there would have been a point to the fake punt.
Well, yeah.
They needed to think a little more and actually have a method to their madness,
right.
because that was madness.
I'd be right on board with that line of thinking had they devised a plan that was legal. Yeah. I mean, they had nobody on the line of scrimmage. The formation was all wrong. Everything was wrong about it. Even if you want to say, okay, I understand, he felt going against Belichick, he had to be unconventional outside the box. Well, come up with something that is plausible. Even if they had run the play and it succeeded, it would have been called back. In some respects, that would have been even more embarrassing.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was a big part of the story because it definitely did turn the game.
Yep.
You know, Patriots come right after that with Gronk with the touchdown, and it kind of didn't put the game away, but it put the game in the control of the Patriots clockwise and in time of game. So that was a huge play, but there were a lot that led up to that. And I thought the Colts played a pretty good defensive game. And offensively, it was the kind of game where they took what the Patriots gave them underneath, a lot of crossing routes. So they were competitive. It was nowhere where a lot of fans thought it would be in terms of, you know, the competition level.
It was a game that we expected, I think, in the offseason and then didn't expect because the Colts hadn't played all that well. And then you get to halftime and the Colts are leading and you're in a dogfight. And I give, you know, we talk about being aggressive, and I thought that's what the Colts had to do, and they did it.
Yep.
They didn't, you know, lag back or, you know, we're going to run the ball with Frank Gore so that Brady's not on the field. They came out. They spread the Patriots out. They basically gave the Patriots their own offense. It was one back, spread them out, and then quick throws, march right down the field, took the lead. And, okay, the Patriots are in a fight here. But in the second half, I thought the Patriots made the adjustments once again. I thought they took away some of that underneath stuff, tried to get Luck to go down the field. His shoulder clearly is an issue. He can't get the ball down the field.
Well, I was just going to ask about that because that's one thing the Colts didn't do was test the Patriots down the field. Do you think it was because of his shoulder?
He was off by 5+ yards on basically every throw he tried to get down the field. Anything he tried to push beyond 15, 20 yards just sailed on him, and I think that's a direct, or I'm assuming that's a direct result of the shoulder injury. And then you combine that with maybe their best pass rush of the season against, admittedly, a bad offensive line, but they took advantage. They were rushing 3 and 4 guys, and they were getting there. We had a little bit of the inside-out combo of Dominic Easley coming up the middle, Chandler Jones with 2.5 sacks on the backside. They were kind of meeting at Luck at times. So I think defensively, they made some nice adjustments.
Yeah. On the other side of the ball, Patriots went in with, you know, obviously Solder out on IR now. And then pretty quickly after that, Cannon goes out, you know, the game with a toe injury, where it, as it's being reported. But I think going into the game, Brady knew he was going to have to move and have to buy some time on his own. And I think he did a really good job at that. I think were it not for Brady moving, rolling out sometimes by design and sometimes because he had to.
Yeah.
I think he made the success that the Patriots had.
Yeah, because the Colts, unlike some of the other teams the Patriots have faced this year, actually took away the first thing that Brady wanted to do frequently. And the ball wasn't coming out in a lightning quick second and a half like we've seen so many times. So you're right, Freddie. I thought he moved well in the pocket. At the first touchdown, he climbed the pocket to hit Edelman to get to 7-7. And then the last touchdown to Blunt was when I think he got flushed to the right side, came over, bought himself some extra time. First touchdown catch ever, by the way, for LeGarrette Blunt since high school, I think he said. He hadn't caught one. That was a big play. That was the one that put the nail in the coffin. You're up 13 there down the stretch. But I think you're right about Brady. I think he went into this game knowing the time probably wasn't always going to be there. I do think Vollmer going to the left side, I think, was better, because I think that that was going to be a tricky matchup for Marcus Cannon. And not that it was a blessing that he got hurt, but I think having Vollmer go to the left side, I think, turned out to be the better option.
Now, Pagano made a big deal. You know, I was at Pagano's post-game press conference, and it was a lot of coulda, woulda, shoulda, and it sounded more like a plea for his own job than anything else. But one of the things he said was, you know, we created a pick six, and that was great. Well, no, Julian Edelman created the pick six. And overall, like, Julian had, you know, he had a good game, but he also had about three drops, including that bobble. Very unlike Edelman. Some people thought it was the broken finger, but one of those, at least one of those drops came before the broken finger.
Yeah, so he did not have his best day. Didn't make a lot of plays. I mean, the week before, when you have a 59-yard touchdown, that's a play. This was the only play he basically made was for the other team when he batted the ball up in the air, had a couple drops. Danny Amendola is the one that actually stepped up, 100-yard game, led them in receiving with seven catches. And, you know, that's what we talk about, that they have those replication of skills. So Edelman has an off night. Amendola steps up.
All right, so this week is Jets week. A different Jets team, Todd Bowles, new coach, no bluster. They're doing pretty well on the field.
But you get to stay right on the edge, though, which is good for us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Darrell Revis back here, so we'll see what happens.
First place on the line.
One of the things we all talked about heading into the season for the Patriots defense was the strength of the front seven and how that might be able to make up for the lack of experience on the back end. We haven't really seen a lot of that so far, but we did see it Sunday night. I thought it was the best game of the year for that front, especially the front three. They got a lot of pressure without having to blitz, without doing a lot of special stuff. But I thought the inside-outside combination, like Andy talked about early on in the show, between Dominic Easley and Chandler Jones, that was a going concern for Indy. I know Indy's offensive line isn't great, but if they can get that kind of performance, especially from Easley, who really hasn't given them a whole lot in his year plus so far, that can change the complexion of the defense. Easley really showed up on Sunday night. Another guy I like to talk about is Keyshawn Martin. It seems like every week I'm talking about him maximizing his opportunities. Doesn't get a lot of chances, but usually comes through when he does. He did it again on Sunday, 39-yard catch, twisting and turning down the sideline. A really nice job adjusting to an underthrown ball from Tom Brady. But here's the thing. I think the receiving core can get even better. Brandon LaFell is close. He's been on the two road trips the last 2 weeks. If we see him on Sunday night, that could be a big jolt. I think it could balance out the passing game, give him a little bit more downfield threat, a little bit more size. You add him with Martin, Edelman, Amendola underneath, all of a sudden this team has a lot of weapons. On special teams remains a huge benefit for this team. They make plays. Obviously, we know about the trick plays that the Colts tried on Sunday. They didn't work. And Matthew Slater is a big part of that, not just for what he does on the field, but he's such an emotional leader. And I worry about this injury to him, not necessarily because the Patriots can't win without Matthew Slater's contributions on the field, but as I said, such an emotional guy, a leader, really prepared, a respected veteran. He really has the ear of a lot of those young guys in that locker room. You always have a lot of mixed and match parts on special teams. To have a guy like Slater in control of those is really important. If he's out for any length of time, he'll be missed.
Coming up on Patriots Football Weekly.
What is the mentality when a team drives right down the field like that? I think they went 13 plays, almost 90 yards.
I'm on the oxygen tank on the sideline. 13 plays, man.
Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you by Pepsi, official soft drink of the New England Patriots. Putnam Investments is a proud partner of the New England Patriots, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork.
Images of the week. These are some special teams plays that highlighted the big win over the Colts. Here's the scrum that ensued after the onside kick by the Colts. A lot of debate on who came up with it. Thankfully, it was the Patriots. This next one is Jamie Collins blocking the extra point. I mean, the look on Adam Vinatieri's face after this one was priceless. And finally, here's an iconic picture that will last forever, the Pagano punt.
Players Perspective, brought to you by Putnam Investments, pursuing performance excellence through new ways of thinking.
Joining me now in the Gillette Stadium Patriots locker room, Patriots defensive lineman Alan Branch. First, Alan, let's start with the big win in Indy. How good did that feel to come back home with a win?
Oh, man, it always feels great to come back to the locker room and have a W under your belt, you know, and they're a good team. Their offense was explosive, and I'm just glad that we're able to withstand, you know, that first punch of the defense and, you know, calm things down and play pretty well.
What is the mentality when a team drives right down the field like that? I think they went 13 plays, almost 90 yards, held the ball for a long time. Are you on your heels a little bit? Are you adjusting on the sideline? What's that like?
I'm on the oxygen tank on the sideline. 13 plays, man. It was pretty serious. But really, you know, it's a time where the defense regroups and talks to each other and, you know, reaffirms our confidence in one another, letting each other know that we have each other's back and, you know, go out the next series and make sure we change the way that the series plays out.
This is going to be a weird question, but some fans, they wanted blood. They wanted a massive blowout in Indy, and they get a one-score victory. Does a player ever look at it that way, or does a player say, 5-0, and we're moving on to the next week, thankfully?
You know, we don't really look at it in that way. We don't, you know, search for blood, but, you know, it's always nice when you start, you know, putting points up on other teams, especially, you know, rivalry teams like Indy. So, I mean, it would have been nice, but... I mean, a win is a win, and, you know, at the end of the year, they won't ask what was the score or if, you know, someone was hurt on another team. It was just what was the, you get the W or the L.
Chris Ivory's a guy that has a reputation of breaking tackles, being physical, leading the league in yards after contact. Is that true, and what are the challenges you face with him specifically?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely true. The guy, he's always been a solid player, but this year, I don't know what he did during the offseason. I mean, he's playing really well, and we got a lot of people to check in front of us, and hopefully if we play well, we can do it.
Good Jets team coming to town. Alan Branch and the Patriots hope to be ready on Sunday. Thanks, Alan.
All right, thank you.
First place in the AFC East on the line this week in Foxborough as the Jets come to town. And on paper, in the standings, New York, one of the best teams in football, much like the Patriots. 4-1 record, number 8 offense in the NFL. One of two teams, thanks to their number 1 defense, to have a top 10 offense and defense. Cardinals, the other team, they're a number 1 scoring defense. They're number 6 in the NFL with a +5 turnover ratio. Number 3 red zone offense, number 1 red zone defense. On paper, Jets are good. Will they be on the field Sunday? We're going to look at the trenches big time this week because the Jets, very good offensive line, very good defensive line. That number 1 defense, it starts up front on the defensive line with Muhammad Wilkerson, Sheldon Richardson. We know DeBrickashaw Ferguson, Nick Mangold on the offensive line. Patriots, something to prove on their defensive front after a solid performance against the Colts, and very much something to prove with that offensive line that's dealing with injuries. Finally, we look at the passing game where it's strength versus strength on one side. That's Tom Brady, best quarterback in the NFL right now, highest passer rating, against Darrell Revis, has returned to gangrene, 3 interceptions, maybe the best cornerback in football right now. And maybe we'll see Rob Gronkowski against Revis, much like we did on the practice field in Foxborough a couple summers ago. On the flip side, it's the Patriots' banged up and questionable secondary, led by Malcolm Butler, going against Ryan Fitzpatrick. Already has 7 interceptions, down near the bottom of the league in passer rating. Fitzpatrick is a big question mark for that Jets offense. Strength versus strength, weakness versus weakness.
Coming up on Patriots Football Weekly.
I just can't get past Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Well, as long as you've done a lot of research and you have a lot of reasons to pull my argument.
I think I've done a lot of research. It's been his career.
Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. New England Football Night is presented by AT&T, mobilizing your world.
This NFL season is shaping up to be a tale of two halves. Teams off to fast starts show signs of faltering down the stretch, and likewise, there are a handful of teams that are poised to bounce back from losing records and make a run at the playoffs. Two examples of the latter are the Steelers and the Eagles. Once Big Ben Roethlisberger went down, many spelled doom for Pittsburgh, but the Steelers are bailing water faster than it's coming into their boat, and Ben's return is around the corner. Now, just a couple weeks ago, some were saying Eagles head coach Chip Kelly may not be a good fit for the NFL after all. But now the Eagles are showing signs of life in a division that is up for grabs. On the other side of the ledger is the 6-0 Broncos. Yes, they have the league's best defense, but you heard it here first. They will wind up 10-6 at best. This will be a precipitous fall that will have the Broncos making the playoffs, but not being a factor. There's a lot of football yet to play. That's good for some teams and not so much for others.
Is it time to start taking the Cincinnati Bengals seriously? I mean, really, this is an impressive 6-0 start for this team. Andy Dalton is playing as well as any quarterback. That's right, as well as any quarterback in the league right now. He's avoiding mistakes. He's making big plays. He's running when he needs to. He's really leading that offense. They're healthy for the first time. Tyler Eifert looks like a mini version of Gronk out there. Not quite as big and strong, but he's making catches in the red zone. And he's been a going concern all year. Impressive wins against Seattle, coming from 17 down. This is a team that really has the attention of the league at 6-0. Are you believing yet? Nah, neither am I. Talk to me in January.
Once upon a time, the ref screwed the Detroit Lions and Calvin Johnson. He caught the ball in the end zone. They said he didn't. Well, they made good for that mistake apparently this weekend because Golden Tate didn't catch the ball in the end zone. He actually tipped it, and it was picked off, and the officials said he did catch it. I don't know what a catch is in the NFL. Players don't know what a catch is in the NFL. And here's the catch. The officials don't know what a catch is in the NFL. It stinks.
Trash Talk, brought to you by Waste Management. Remodeling or just have clutter to get rid of? Waste Management's new Baxter. Dumpster in a bag can take it on. Visit thebaxter.com for more info.
Todd Bowles' quietly confident Jets come to Foxborough on Sunday, and we ask, is this the toughest test the Patriots will face the rest of the way?
You know, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I think it is. I think the Jets are the best team, maybe the most balanced team that they'll see the rest of the way. Obviously, there were some injury problems with some of these other
teams.
Heading into the season, I would have thought the Jets were the fourth best team in the AFC East. But I think a lot differently now. I think the defense has come together. I do. I think the balance they have on offense and between offense and defense, toughest challenge they'll see.
Do I have to say more than just Ryan Fitzpatrick to fill out this segment?
Yeah, it would help.
Because I think you have challenges down the road. You have a matchup. I know everybody, the Broncos stink and Manning stinks. Well, they're undefeated.
You know who's playing worse than Ryan Fitzpatrick? Peyton Manning.
Right, and he's 6-0, and he's in Denver, and that is a tough game. Going to Denver is a tough place no matter who the quarterback
is,
right?
I didn't say it was going to be a cakewalk.
And Manning is doing enough to make plays. He's making bad plays, but he's making good plays.
Right.
So he's Ryan Fitzpatrick. And Ryan Fitzpatrick is coming to your house right now. I think at the Jets might be a bigger challenge later in this year. This game, this week, I think the Patriots are coming off a game where they're disappointed. I think they are fired up. And there's no letdown from the Colts. This is rivalry and then rivalry again. I think they're going to be fired up. And I know the Jets' defense is legit. I'm not poo-pooing the Jets' defense. But their offense, are you just going to run Chris Ivory and then hope Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't make mistakes?
No. Well,
Seven picks.
No, it's not just running Chris Ivory and hope that no one makes mistakes. They have some weapons on offense, too. I think Marshall and Decker are formidable wide receivers and certainly on par with what you saw last week. And in the state that Andrew Luck was in last week, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is as good as that, too, because clearly Luck couldn't drive the ball down the field. This is going to be a test. Home, away, it doesn't matter. These are division games. They're going to be tough. You saw what happened last year with Geno Smith. You needed to block a field goal on the last play of the game just to win the game. So I think
different Jets team.
This
totally
is personnel.
Different regime, different quarterback,
But it's not different personnel.
But
it's largely the same personnel. There's a couple of key guys, obviously Fitzpatrick and Marshall are two of them. But on defense, there's a lot of personnel that is very familiar with the Patriots. And don't underestimate what Darrelle Revis could do. He wasn't a part of that secondary last year, and he knows the Patriots now from being with them.
Ooh, he knows the Patriots. Patriots know him.
Yeah.
Tom Brady knows him from the practice field in the game field. And I'm sorry, I know it's a little repetitive, but I just can't get past Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Well, as long as you've done a lot of research and you have a lot of reasons to poo-poo my argument.
I think I've done a lot of research. It's been
Ryan
his career. Ever since he left up the road at Harvard, he's been a tease. He's a guy that, yes, he can win you some games. Yes, he can make some plays. And yes, he will give it away in the end. And he will give it away in the end
Andy,
defense.
If you're asking me, can the Jets finish ahead of the Patriots?
No, I'm asking you, can the Jets win on Sunday?
Beat the Patriots? And I'm saying yes.
Can they? Yeah, I could.
And he's done it before, and he can do it again.
Won't happen.
Tonight's show is brought to you in part by Fisher Plows, a whole new way to attack winter. Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you by Pepsi, official soft drink of the New England Patriots. You, your advisor, and Putnam, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork.
All right, it's time for questions on PFW, but as we do almost every week, it's time for the Wilson Hart Power Index.
Every week, once the foundation of the index is put in place early in the season, that's how it works.
Enough with the defense mechanisms. What do you got?
Pretty similar up top. Packers stay number one, Patriots number two. Interestingly, Cardinals stay the same despite some questionable play and things. And I think that tells you how well, statistically, they're playing on both sides of the ball to sort of balance them out as one of the best teams. Panthers 4, Bengals actually move up to 5, Broncos down to 6. But a lot of, you know, very similar names up there. And then at the bottom, Jacksonville Jaguars down the bottom, Detroit Lions second to last, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, all the usual suspects.
All right, let's get on to the questions. This first one comes from Pete Clark, and it's very involved. He says, with the Giants floundering,
yes,
is there a chance that Bill Belichick steps aside and allows Josh McDaniels to come in as coach and Bill is just the GM? Or is there a chance that Bill Belichick might have his sights on the Giants' job to resurrect them and he goes over to the Giants?
I don't think either is all that likely. If anything, and I know we can't know this, we're just presuming, I would say the latter. I don't think he would step aside so Josh can ascend to the throne here. And as you like to say, not his decision. That would be a Kraft decision as well moving forward. But we do know, we've seen those specials. Remember when he went back to Giants Stadium and he's walking around in the rack and he got all teary-eyed and he's crying. It holds a special place in his heart. I don't think he wants to revisit it. I think he's very happy with what he's built here. But I think that one would be the long shot, wow, maybe. Other than that, I think it's much ado about nothing.
Yeah,
I agree.
I don't think either scenario. All right, James Siegel writes in. His question is about Jamie Collins' play on the extra point.
Awesome.
If I understand the rules correctly, if Collins touches a lineman, it's a foul.
Correct.
So if a lineman had time and stood up or reached up, would it have been a penalty, and why didn't they do that?
Yeah, well, that's something that Bill Belichick talked about it earlier in the week, and it was something that they noticed specifically about the way the Colts blocked it. They do stay low, and he was able to jump over. But he's right. The email is right. If you do make contact there, if you land on somebody, whether it's anybody in the pile, that is a penalty. It's a 15-yard penalty. So that's why it's sort of a risky proposition. And when they did it, it was at a time that it wasn't necessarily going to impact the outcome of the game. You know, it wasn't like on a game-winning field goal that you're potentially giving two chances to. I was a little curious as to when they did it because if it was a situation they were up 13, so if that made it 6 and now it's 6 and they ended up tying it, now it's desperation. I either block this extra point or we lose. And I thought that would have been a better time to do it, but unbelievable athleticism by Collins to get over the whole way, not touching anybody, and made it look easy.
I think you just saw the opportunity.
Just made it look easy.
Yeah.
It was something that they had seen on film, too.
And they could target it by, clearly, he goes on the hand. As soon as the long snapper the holder releases the hand to call for the snap, that's when Collins goes. If you wanted to, you could do a double signal, and it's not on the second one. You could easily get him to jump off sides. So I think it's curious that they use that play and took it out of their arsenal. But the flip side is maybe they wanted teams to have to think about it in game.